Lauren Brenner. I'm a librarian in Brookline, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. And I'm here just to help moderate this panel. I was going to have everyone just briefly introduce themselves and say kind of why you're here. You can just say your name and who you are, just so people know.
I'm Durf, and I'm here because I was asked to come here.
I'm Lucy. I'm the same.
I'm Uli Lust, and I would not answer like my... I just did a book called Today is the Last Day of the Rest of My Life, and it's at Fantagraphics. It's autobiographical.
And I'm Raina Salkemeyer. I'm the author and illustrator of the graphic novel Smile.
So the topic of this panel in general is just the idea of writing memoir in graphic form. And I think one of the first questions I always have when I think about memoir is how you figure out what to include and what to leave out, and kind of winnowing down your memories to make sure that you're representing what you want to tell in the story and to make it a narrative rather than just kind of a fact-driven sort of regurgitation, shall I say. So how do you guys select what you write about and make it work as a narrative?
Am I always going to go first?
Whoever wants to go first. You do not have, and not everyone has to answer.
I can go first.
Yeah.
Go first.
Well, I think it's important when writing memoir to know what your book is basically going to be about. Smile is a book about my dentistry history, and I had a really bad accident when I was in grade 6. I tripped and fell and knocked out my 2 front teeth. And didn't have them really back in my mouth again until I was a sophomore in high school. So I knew I wanted to write a book about that experience. So it was sort of like, well, I know I'll focus on the dentistry aspect and then how that affected me. So it affected my social life a little bit. It affected my self-esteem. So those are the things I knew I needed to include. And I wrote it as a webcomic. So I was putting up a page per week and getting feedback from readers as I went. And they were kind of helping to tell me what they were most interested in, and I found they were really interested in the social aspect of my middle school career for some reason, so I ended up including more of that than I set out to originally, and so far it's the only memoir I've written, so I'd like to hear what everybody else has to say about that subject.
I wrote a book about, my mother is a chef, a professional chef, and she's retired now, but I grew up in the food industry in New York, and I wanted to tell the story of food and the connection to memory and food and family, and use food comics to talk about sort of my experiences growing up in the food industry. So I picked sort of a number of different memories that I strongly recall through sense memory, through food sort of taste and smell, and arranged them in chronological order and put recipes in between all of them. So that was my sort of process of choosing the various memories, the ones that are strongest associated with the common theme of the book.
My turn. I'm Durf, and the memoir I'm best known for is My Friend Dahmer, and I'm the only one who did my homework assignment, so I actually have visuals. And no excuses.
It's out of bio, so we're our own visuals.
Right, yeah.
I do that. I've acted out my books before on stage, too, but not today. And this is the story of my teenage friendship with Jeffrey Dahmer. So when somebody asked me, why do you choose that story? I went, come on. Because it fell from the sky and dropped in my lap, that's why. And that's kind of, you know, the standard I have for telling memoir is it has to be a really compelling story. And this one certainly is. I also did a previous memoir. Let's see if I can find it. Sorry, I got a couple things on here. Oh, yeah. Trash, which is my story of my career as a garbage man. Again, I mean, this is just kind of a story that, you know, I think deserves to be told. And that's really the standard that I have is, you know, do I want to read it? You know, and I'm not a huge fan of memoir, actually. There's a lot of it out there that's, you know, really lousy. You know, nobody really wants to read about your bad breakup in 11th grade. So
I do. I love stuff like that.
I'll tell you about mine after.
All right, yeah. I'd love to hear it. Love that.
Dahmer's not involved.
I've read that one.
Okay. But you know, I keep finding myself telling him, so I guess, you know, I should stop.
Well, this was one thing that I wondered when I was reading your book, is how often you had told that story at, like, a dinner party before.
Well, yeah, and the garbage truck stuff, too. I mean, right. It was just constant, you know, party talk, and finally I just started writing him down, and you know, then I don't have to tell him anymore. I mean, that's the great thing about my friend Dahmer. Exactly. I don't have to ever talk about Dahmer again. I can just say, read the book, and it's marvelous. And I get a royalty for
it. Right, yeah. Not just a free dinner. It's great. Right.
Towards the
God, it's like
on
my nose.
Sorry. The third and the fifth.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all. I just want people to hear in the back to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear
me
now?
There. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not a the book which came out right now at Fantagraphics. It's the first autobiographic book I was doing. I'm more into documentary comics, means drawing comics about real life and not escapistic stuff. And I was doing a lot of portraits about other people. And then I was looking for material for a longer story where I can develop the characters much more. And the story I chose was rejected by the publishing houses, and then my boyfriend said, hey, you had this experience when you were a teenage girl, that would be good material for a comic. And then I was thinking about it, and he was right. And I found out that it's a very cool thing to talk about yourself, because you have all the information in your head.
Right.
You don't have to do any research. It's so cool.
Actually, I disagree with that.
Yes, me too.
Because if you're writing memoir about something that happened 20 years ago,
yeah,
sometimes
true,
you do
yeah.
want to put it into context. And I did kind of have to look up what was going on in the late 80s, early 90s, because that's when my book was taking place. And I just wanted to make sure that it was accurate.
Yeah, you were right. And I also had to go to Italy to do photos because I didn't remember the architecture and the landscapes and all this.
And my friend, my book, my friend Dahmer, has 20 pages of footnotes in the back.
Oh, yeah.
So. No, I spent like 10 years researching.
Yeah, but it was not only about you, huh? It was not about your own
right.
experience.
Sure,
you
sure.
Made
but even that I researched. I mean, you know, when you tell nonfiction, there's a difference between, well, there can be a difference between memoir and nonfiction.
Oh, definitely.
Because, let's face it, memoir, you can just make shit up and no one will know.
Right, right.
And I think a lot of people do that, and not just in comics, but certainly in the book world. We've seen a lot of that, where people get caught in that. And, you know, nonfiction, memoir, you really have to get your facts straight, especially when you're dealing with someone who's world famous, because you'll get nailed if you don't.
You guys are all taking my questions. But I just
well,
wanted
jump
to say,
in there.
I was just going to say, that's one of my big questions I had, is when you write, what I think of as nonfiction versus memoir, as a librarian, and for nonfiction, we somehow expect a higher level of basically the endnotes, the things about where, what you changed, what was, you know, factual, what was perhaps shifted around in order to tell the story in the way that you wanted to do it. But I think there's less expectation of that for memoir. That memoir is kind of given more over to the creator and just saying, okay, you know, you are telling this story, but people don't tend to nitpick in the same way, depending. But for example, I found the endnotes on My Friend Dahmer to be kind of so important to understanding the entire book by itself. And I wonder how much responsibility you feel to do that, to tell people where you're getting the stories from and what you might have altered or what might have changed in your memory
sure.
versus how you're relating.
Well, a lot. But also, I mean, you know, I was trained and educated as a journalist and worked for many years in newspapers. So, I mean, this is just the way that I learned how to tell stories. And, you know, I'm kind of always adhere to that. Even when I do fiction, I kind of compose them the same way. So, I mean, that's what I think about that. Yes?
I like the freedom to make shit up.
I'm
book,
jealous.
Right, I know. It's awesome. I wasn't covering something that is like world-renowned and this figure of like repute. So I, you know, people don't know, so I can make stuff up about myself. But generally, the way that I remember things, I think, is very accurate. And then I would speak to my mom, and I'd be like, remember 20 years ago when I ate that thing? And she'd be like, you're totally wrong about all of those facts. I'd be like, no, that's how I remember it, and that's how it was. And so my research was generally... talking to my family and, like, trying to remember the different things that we experienced together. And it's really interesting the way that memory shifts from person to person. And I think that's why memoir is really compelling, because they can be writing about something from their perspective and someone can remember it completely differently, which is really, really interesting to me, I find. And, you know, you always have to read memoir with kind of a grain of salt that it's coming from their perspective.
But I think memories are the truth. Whether it's accurate, whether it's exactly the way it happened, you probably remember how you felt emotionally during whatever time it was in your life that you're writing about, and I think that's true.
Well, there's a difference between emotional memory and factual memory, though. Because, you know, I mean, Adolf Hitler remembers things a certain way, too. That doesn't
mean he would have written his memoirs.
It's factual.
Maybe
you can
tell. Kids are my audience. I have a lot of kid readers, and so I do tons of school visits and library visits and stuff, and overwhelmingly, was this true? Did this thing really happen? What about this part? What about this part? And I usually try to preface it with every single thing in this story is true, except for a few name changes and, you know, little, very incidental details that I just don't remember exactly what it was like, but these are my memories. So I do feel I need to over-explain and, like, tell them, yes, it's all true, and yes, here's how it really happened.
Were you actually wearing those stonewashed jeans on your first day of school? Because that was my, like, was that
You've
true?
You've seen that photo, Lucy.
I know. I know that it's actually true. I still had to ask.
Yes.
Yeah, I like to deal with the I mean, reality is not always as well choreographed like a fiction, and I like to deal with that. It's a challenge to bring this into life, what happened or what my memory says that it happened like this. On the other hand, I'm always a bit offended if an audience or if somebody asks me or thinks that I just tell these things as they happened, because that's a big offense for an author. Because I really, I arrange it. I mean, no, I don't arrange it, but I curate, that's a good word, the reality that it has this, the denseness of a novel. I mean, I make literature out of it. I'm not interested about the memoir or diary aspect.
But telling the story.
Yes, it's just a story. And I have to select the interesting aspects and the details which make it lively and all that stuff. And I like that reality sometimes is a bit obscure, not as fiction, where sometimes what happens is it's very calculated, you know, or you know, in reality sometimes the things go, they make strange corners. My English is not so good, I'm sorry. And I love that because it makes the story more interesting. I don't like it if it's all so smooth and like a Hollywood movie, you know.
So another question that comes up always in writing memoir is how you represent other people, especially people you know. There's often discussion of, you know, family members and things like that, but how much do you think about how you represent not yourself but everybody else in that story? And how do you check with them? Do you not check with them? Would you alter something if they objected or not? That kind of, how do you kind of decide how much you want to pay attention to what someone else's memories are?
Big problem. My boyfriend says if you do a comic biographic, you should tell the stories about the other people as if they would be dead. Be as honest as possible, make them. But I'm not sure if I can.
But they're not dead.
Yes, my parents, I really like them. I know they will read the book sooner or later. But I will find a, I hope I will find a balance between the good story, which is not always very nice, and the. But no, mostly family are feel offended, even if the audience doesn't think it's a bad thing that is told about them. Like David Bay, for example, he told a story about the disease of his brother, and his parents were totally angry with him. And even they were shown as very careful parents and nice parents. But the mother thought how she is shown in the comic is awful. Because she is not shown like in a like in a birthday album, you know, like in a photo album where everybody's always shining.
My mother actually read Smile and then said, "Rena, I'm not like this at all. You made me too nice."
That's cool. That's the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm not sure my mother's ever read My Friend Amran. That's okay.
Lucky.
I actually worked with, I think I got a photo of him. I worked with three other guys who collectively we were called the, yeah, there they are, the Dahmer Fan Club. And I'm still friends with these guys, and I worked hand-in-hand with them for many years, interviewing them. And, you know, what I would do, and getting back to what someone said earlier, I forget who it was, it might have been you, Lucy, about memory being different between people. That is not my experience making this book, because I would ask them, hey, you remember when, you know, we all went, Donald went to the mall and did this or that, how did you remember that? And they would remember it, and I was surprised how often our memories synced up. And if I had, you know, three people, say, remembering something the same way, it's a high likelihood that that's pretty close to how it happened. So I found that a very useful exercise. And maybe it's because, you know, I'm also really into observational comics. And I've done a comic strip for many years called The City, which ran in iWeekly here for a while, a long time. I think that paper's gone, isn't it? And a lot of it is just observational stuff like that. And I get the same buzz from it, too. I really enjoy it. So maybe that's just the way I'm wired. I don't know.
It's really lucky to have that resource of three people that were all also present at the time
great.
That you're writing. Like,
yeah,
I'm super jealous about that. That's
I'm sorry.
Awesome. I'm embarking on another memoir project about my high school career, and I went to four different high schools and retained like no friendships from that period of time. And I'm like, how am I gonna write about this? I'll just write about what I remember and like screw them if they don't agree. But at the same time, I'm kind of like I'm jealous that I don't have the resources to like ask someone else about how they remember a certain thing.
Well, you didn't have something like this happen to you.
That's true.
Either.
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes a kind of a topic
so far.
Of conversation. When yeah. one of your friends kills and eats 17 people.
Yeah. A lot of attention on that. I mean, my book that I just came out with, it's a lot about my mom. And what's nice, I'm an only child, so I can get away with a lot of things. So I write about things that my parents, you know, they like, what are they going to do? Disown me? Then they have no children. So I think that helps, being an only child. I advise.
Do you shave a few pounds off people?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That really helps. You can make them, like, you know, in a Nazi uniform, but if you make them look really attractive looking, they're like, this is really nice and accurate.
Thank you for the tip.
I think it helps.
I wondered if all of you could give us an example from your work of a scene you thought worked particularly well, that you it just went through that moment when you said, okay, yes, that's exactly what I was trying to get across, and a kind of favorite.
I can. I just had it up.
Okay.
If I can find it again. I have a scene, driving at night on a country road. And what I thought about when you're remembering like sensory memory was, you know, how the headlights, like if any of you grew up in the country, you know this, it's really just pitch black. And you've got these trees sort of looming overhead and the lights bounce off the trees really weirdly. And then if you come across somebody, in this case somebody walking on the side of the road, it's like just this, I mean your heart jumps up in your throat. And so I was kind of channeling that when I was putting this scene together, and I was really happy the way it came out. And that's all from remembering something just like that. Your turn.
I have a scene in my book about I grew up in New York City, but my parents split up and I moved to the country with my mom, and she started working on a farm, and I was like this total city kid, you know, just like, how dare this country get into my way? But I happened upon a group of geese that were nesting, and geese are really territorial. We were actually talking about what assholes geese are before we started this panel. This is like
carrying
on.
Really, we were.
Yeah.
She's not making that up.
So I happened upon this group of nesting geese, and they got territorial and attacked me, and I was like 8 or something, and these geese were like chasing me with their like horrible snake necks and stuff. And they chased me up a tree where I hit a hornet's nest in the tree, and the hornets stung me on the eyelids, and I fell out of the tree into cow dung where the geese attacked me. And had I had the foresight at the time, I would have been laying there as the geese attacked me with burning eyelids, totally blind, going, this is going to make a really funny comic. But I unfortunately didn't. But that's like one of my favorite sequences in my book because it's exactly what happened, and it's like the comedic timing is perfect. Like, so like that's my favorite one. It worked really well.
Nice. I couldn't tell. I have no answer to this question.
I have a lot of scenes that I like from Smile, but and I wish I could show pictures because talking about comics without seeing them is very challenging. But there's a scene where I was in 7th grade, and there was this boy in 6th grade, and we were in band class together, and we were supposed to meet at a dance, and then I stood him up and didn't go, and didn't tell him I wasn't going.
You so, monster.
I know. And I knew the scene was working because when I was putting it up on the web week to week, my readers were like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? And like, so I started drawing the scene out as much as possible, and so there are these like 2 full-page spreads of me just like looking at the door, looking away, as the music is thumping in the background, and then eventually leaving.
Wait a minute, you had no teeth,
yeah.
And a guy asked you out for a dance, and you stood him up.
He was younger than her.
I was a jerk, but I think it's actually really fun in memoir to sort of paint yourself as realistically as possible and not, like, I like not trying to make myself look like I'm perfect, because in some ways I feel like I'm apologizing for what I did then. But I knew the scene was a hit when my husband was, like, beside himself. He was like, I can't believe, oh, I can't even read, this is terrible. I was like, yeah. The more uncomfortable memoir is, for me, the more fun it is to write. No bee sting, though. And then he gave me Valentine chocolates the next day.
Aww.
And I didn't open them up. I was like,
your husband or did
no, no, the kid. He's like, oh, where were you last night? And I was like, oh, I had to go home. I had a stomach ache. He's like, well, here's your present. And I didn't open it until I got home. And it was like Shoppers Drug Mart chocolates. Like it was like $2.99. Like the price tag was still on it. So.
Actually, I have a bee sting story. You want to hear?
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I was a garbage man, you know, you're hanging on the back of the truck. And at times, you're boogieing along like at 40 miles an hour. And I was talking to the other guy on the other side of the truck, and as I had my mouth open, a bee went in my mouth at 60 miles an hour. And I let go and fell off the back of the truck and landed in a ditch, which happened to be full of raw sewage. Rolled for like 20 feet in raw sewage, and then I came to the end of.
Is this in the book about being a garbage man?
It will be. Yes.
Okay. The next one, yeah. Memoirs have to. I think we all have to be good storytellers.
Yeah.
I feel like we just like to tell stories.
And have like a certain number of unfortunate stories that have happened to us that we want to share with people.
We're going to do a bee book.
Yeah.
Bee anthology.
Cartoonists hate bees.
Yeah.
The anthology.
That would be a good point to think about the idea that can you tell good stories about happy life?
Mine is happy. My book is very happy.
Okay.
Mishaps or serial killer cannibals in mind.
Well, I'm a generally happy person, but you know the books. No, they're not about happy stories.
Did you guys have a story or a part of the story that you really wanted to include but didn't work out for some reason? Like kind of like a B-side.
I guess not.
Yeah.
No.
There was one. I have a couple deleted scenes, which I actually included in the ebook. But one of my friends told me after the fact.
Is that the one at the pond?
No.
Oh.
That's in the book.
That's in the book.
It was when Dahmer got spanked at high school because he got caught drinking booze on school grounds just one time, and he got hauled into the office, and the assistant principal gave him a choice: either he could call his parents right there and explain what he did, or he could take 10 licks, and Dahmer chose the licks. And my friend Neil told me this, like, a month after the book came out, and I'm like, oh, man, why didn't you tell me that before? So I drew it up in the ebook, but yeah, it's a great scene. But that's the only thing I can think of.
That's awesome.
So, I guess I'm the only one.
I only had the opposite experience that I think, no, I cannot draw this. It's not possible that I make this public. And then I draw it because the story, it's if if it's more strange, that it's good for the story. Even if it's very embarrassing or whatever.
Right. Agree.
Yeah.
You should have Chester Brown up here.
Yes.
I would love to hear the stories that didn't make it into that book.
Yeah. I don't think he has a story that doesn't make
right.
it into any book.
It's all in there.
At least we hope that.
Have you ever had a story change as you're doing it, as you're drawing it? That it provokes you to remember more as you go?
Well, you find out more as you go
right.
along, but no. I mean, it doesn't change completely, no. Not for me.
I mean, I think it's editing. That's where
right.
editing comes in, is that
yes.
we all live 365 days a year, but when you're writing memoir, sometimes 10 of those days make it in, and sometimes 300 of them do. But it's like, if I feel like, oh, this is part of the timeline, but it's not really fitting in with the theme of the book, I'll just write a note to myself, like, maybe I'll include this in a future book. Because you write so many books about your life, I don't want to, run out of stories, so I don't want to tell it all in one go.
Yeah, when I start with a book, I really know exactly what is the main subject of this book, or what is the strong aspect of this story, and then I can include as much details as I like if they come to my mind. But the strong storyline is fixed. Yes.
Yeah, agree.
Somewhat. I start with an idea of what the story is going to be, and then I go out and get the facts that I need to write the story. I mean, I don't have a real clear vision of where it's going. And sometimes the story surprises you. So I like to leave myself open for that. But if you just imagine exactly what the story is, and then you go out and get the facts to fit that story, that's not really true.
Yeah,
that's
but right. it's in your memory. You don't go out and find something that's totally different.
Occasionally, yeah. Occasionally
okay.
you do.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're trying to tell, When I was writing Relish, I was like, oh, I just want to talk about how much I love food. But it ended up being about the connection of, sense memory and memory and how food really formed my familial connections and stuff like that. And so that's really what I think the book is about. But, if someone's like, what's the book about? And one word answer, I'm like, food. So
yeah. But that's the very important aspect, that you never tell a story about only one aspect.
Right.
I think that even each panel has to have two stories inside, or every page or whatever.
Right. Because there's something going on with the text and something going on with the visual and the interplay in there. Yeah.
Do you think about the audience that you're writing for at any point? Or is it more just the idea of, you're writing the book you want to read or you want to tell?
I think about it a lot.
Yeah. Oh, really? No, I can't say that I can't, which is probably why I'm a millionaire today. maybe a little bit with my friend Dahmer, because I really toned, I didn't include any swear words or didn't include any violence at all, just because I knew everyone would expect that. So, and I didn't want to leave myself open for that kind of, he's just exploiting it, blah, blah, blah. So I purposely made it as clean as I possibly could. Wow. you like my answer? You're passing down
I think you only say this because you learned to be a journalist, and you are trained to really think about the audience, and when you do your comic work, you can go a step back again.
Well, maybe, but, trust me, being a journalist doesn't take that much, doesn't take that much brain power. But, yeah, it may just be a reflex. Yeah, it may just be a brain. I don't know.
I think with Smile, I didn't think about it. I wrote a book about 12-year-old me for 12-year-old me to sort of comfort the kid that I was and to write a book that I wish that I had at the time. But now I know who my audience is because they're standing at my table right now waiting for me. They're 9-year-old and 10-year-old girls, and it's incredible. And they want more. So I'm writing another book about my childhood, and it's about me and my sister. It's called Sisters. And now I'm thinking a lot about it, and I'm realizing that my sister is about 9 or 10 years old in this story, so I'm thinking, wow, she's them. So I need to make sure that I'm representing her in a way that I'll be able to relate to, too. And I am not close with my sister. We've always had sort of a rivalry, and we're both artists. We've always been really competitive, and our personalities are really different. So I'm really thinking about, trying to represent her and myself in ways that don't, like put either one of us down. Like, I don't want to make her seem like a horrible person because I don't want my readers to read it and be like, yeah, my sister's a horrible person too, boo, and you know, they'll beat them up or anything.
What does your sister think about the book?
I actually showed her the first draft of it, and I was expecting her to come back and say, hey, like, this didn't happen this way.
Right.
And all she said was, wow, I didn't realize I was such a jerk to everybody when I was little. Like, yep. And that was it.
Here it is, ink and paper.
She didn't ask me to change things.
Oh,
she
wow.
Really. She gave me a little bit more insight into how she felt about certain situations as far as, like, relating to my parents.
Her alternative version of Sisters will be coming out next
week. I'd actually really like to see something like that. Yeah. But I asked her, like, well, you know, what were your thoughts about me at this time in our lives? And she was like, I don't know, you were just some teenager. So I'm like, well, then I'm free to interpret as I like.
Okay. Well, I wanted to open it up a little bit so we have questions for the audience. Anybody?
Wow. Or not.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I can repeat the question.
Yeah. Okay, you brought up the point that since like your work is autobiographical, that you have access more or less to all the information like in terms of the story and stuff. So I'm wondering, since you have such a lot of information, how do you know, like, can each tell me what kind of method or formula you use to determine what's important to leave in and what's important to leave out?
Okay, the question is basically, since it's an autobiographical comic, how do you, since you know everything that could potentially go into the story, how do you edit it down to what's important and what's necessary to tell, and how do you take things out?
Well, with my friend Dahmer, and again, I know I'm going to contradict myself, this is where being trained as a journalist really helped a lot, because you learn how to compile notes, you learn how to synthesize a story, and, you know, then you let your storytelling instincts take over about what's, you know, and obviously you have to put in key things, because that's the way it's done. With my other memoir, Trash, you know, you just have to rely on your instincts about what is good for the story and what is not, and you know, you don't have to include everything, obviously. And if you feel it's bogging down, the pace is bogging down, you cut it out. It's just really just learning by doing in that case.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has to do with editing muscle memory, because if you're writing a lot of autobiographical stories, you sort of start to develop an instinct for what you feel, what important details are and what should sort of carry the story along. And you know, you'll write a lot of stories that have lots of details that aren't important to begin with, and then sort of like wheedle it down a little bit at a time. And I think this, you know, this can be helped by having an outside editor. This can be helped by putting your work online the way that Raina did, where you have input from a readership that allows you to sort of see what the sort of core of the story is.
Yeah, I said before that I have to know the strong columns which build the house, the story. I have to know this for sure. Then I am self-confident enough to do this story. And then I start playing around and I integrate everything that comes to my mind, maybe in a script or whatever. And then I start cutting it off again until this moment where it's like I take away as much as I can. As long as the house still stands. something like that. Yeah.
Do you work in a script, or do you work in thumbnails? Or
I do a script in the beginning that summarizes very, 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 and then I do, every night, I do my sketches, my storyboards for the next day. But I like to think a lot about the construction. It's I enjoy that very much.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I generally start with a list. Like, I sort of try to break down the event, whatever it was, into a list so that I can sort of see the sequence as a whole. And with memoir, I feel like I really need to know where it's going and how the ending is going to be. Because if you're just writing memoir sort of as it comes to you on a stream of consciousness level, it's hard to really have all of your points leading up to the finale. That's
more like diary comics.
Yeah. So in that sense, it is like writing any type of story, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. But so I start with a list, and then I go to thumbnails, and then once this, it was different with Smile. Smile, I actually did as I went, but I knew where it was going. I knew exactly how it ended, and it was just a matter of getting there. And I guess the same is true, yeah, with what I'm working on at the moment.
So you'd say it's mostly instinct that you're
Mostly instinct? No, it's a mental thing, plus instinct.
It's a combination of, I mean, you really have to be organized if you're telling a nonfiction story. You just can't pile up material in the corner and expect that it's somehow going to form itself into a story.
But I
would
say,
I'm sorry.
I will say that instinct comes with practice. More instinct.
But, yeah, I organize stories in a file cabinet by chapter and scene, and I have separate files for different things where I put my photo reference, I put, you know, whatever reference comes in, you know, interviews or transcripts or whatever. So, I mean, I keep organized right from the beginning, and it makes it a lot easier.
Yes.
Just off that question, just to say, I presume you all have an editor of some sort, whether it's an official editor or not, the person you trust to help you figure that out. At what point do you give it to them? You know, do you feel like you have to complete a draft? Does it just depend on what you're trying to tell?
My editor didn't see my print novel until the first draft was done. That's what he bought, in fact. And, he made very few changes, and the ones he made were good. So, I mean, I have no complaints at all.
Yeah, I'm a little, like, hoardy about my work when it's in development. So my editor, she saw the scripts, which changed a lot from, like, scripts to finished comic pages. And then she saw the penciled pages, and then she saw the inks. So, like, you know, various stages for editing and back and forth. And, you know, it's so different to have the writing edited than to have the art edited. So it was, like, a whole different process.
Yeah, my boyfriend is a cartoonist too, and he is a brilliant writer, which I am not, so I am showing him the stuff in chapters sometimes. Or the last book I showed him when it was finished. It depends on the work, but it's great to have somebody whom you trust completely.
Sure. My husband is also an editor and a cartoonist, and he's great at it, so I tend to complete an entire draft of a story and then run it past him, and then he says, all right, this 50-page sequence needs to go, this needs clarifying, this character needs to develop, like, he's great. And so when the second draft is completed, that becomes my first draft for my editor, and then it goes from there. And they're both really different types of people, my professional editor and my husband, so I like getting two different perspectives on it.
More questions? How about you in the back?
Hi, I have a question for Derek. I really enjoyed your
book. Thank you.
I was when you were flipping through some slides. You seem to have all the slides about reference materials about the book. Do you mind showing some of those?
Oh, the reference material? Wow, man, he's really paying attention. Well, yeah, this is from the FBI files, which I got a hold of. It's like 15,000 documents that I had to dig through. These are transcripts of interviews that Dahmer gave in prison to, like, psychologists and stuff, where it's, on one hand, it was really great, but on the other hand, when you see your name mentioned in an FBI document, you get a little, you know, flop sweat. These are like, you know, photos from high school, and this is a page from my high school journal on Dahmer, which was really kind of fun because it was written, you know, without any knowledge of what he would later become in a teenage voice, which I then employ in the book. I don't know what else is in here. I wasn't even paying attention when I put this. Oh, those are interview notes, like interviews later when the crimes broke. I would interview a lot of neighbors and friends and things, and this is how I do notes, obviously, as a comic guy. You're drawing pictures, so. And there's more. I've got a whole spiel about that, but I won't bore you. Talking about the interviewing for a story.
Okay. The striped shirt and then right behind.
I have a question for Rayna. Did drama have anything to do with, like, your life at all, or is it just an idea?
She wants to know if drama, which is my follow-up to Smile, was based on my real life or not. I say it's fiction because my name's not Callie and I don't have purple hair. But I was a theater kid when I was in high school, and I did spend a lot of time backstage during musicals and sort of observing what was going on back there. And I made a lot of really interesting friends. So that book is fiction, but the characters are very much inspired by real people and real friends. I'll tell you more about it afterwards if you want.
I have one like that too. My second book, Punk Rock and Trailer Parks, is the same thing. It's totally fiction, but you pull from real life experience. I find that very useful. Obviously, you do too. Because when you write what you know, even if you make it up, I mean, it gives that work an element of truth, and I think that the readers really respond to that, and that's obviously your experience.
The readers often say, this could not possibly ever happen in real life, and I'm like, yeah.
See, I get it with Punk Rock and Trailer Parks particularly, which is about this punk club in, of all places, Akron, Ohio. I get people writing me all the time saying, oh yeah, I was at that show. I remember it exactly like, and it's like, no man, I made all that up. It didn't even happen. And right on the title page it says, you know, in like 18-point type, this is fiction, I made it all up. And,
no, good job, then.
No, no.
What is it about comics as a medium that you think lends itself so well to memoir?
I would like to answer that. In Germany, if you do memoirs, it's not considered as real literature. And that's really strange, because I think most literature is working, like you two said before, that the authors take their own experience and then put it together to a fictional story. The most fiction is inspired by real life of the author or of other people, but they don't say it. In the literature world, they don't say, that was my own experience, or that is autobiographically inspired. Maybe it's different in America, I don't know, but in Europe, in Germany, it's like a dirty spot on your dress if you say it's autobiographical. So they don't say it. And in the comics, they are not ashamed about talking about that. It's their own experience. That's the idea I got about that subject in the last years.
It's interesting. My editor and I were talking about this recently, and she was talking about how nonfiction memoir comics sell really well, that people are really willing to buy them, and that's why they keep getting published in a word. But also I think that it has to do with the whole author photo effect. Sort of when you read a book about someone's life and you get to flip to the author photo and sort of have this connection with this person. On every page of a graphic novel, you get to have a connection with this person. You get to see their hand at work. You get to see the image of themselves. And I think that it's nice to sort of connect with something that you know is real. You know, we have this history of comics as, you know, superheroes and fantasy and aliens and stuff like that. And I think the idea of really bringing that back to the personal life and bringing that into the human world, adding that element of truth and honesty, that it's an actual person telling their actual story, showing an actual depiction of events that actually happened, sort of brings it apart from that whole, like, superheroes, aliens, monsters thing, the tradition of, like, that sort of genre of comics, and makes it its own artwork, its own art form, and I think that's really compelling for people to be able to sort of have that author photo effect on every page, and have that connection visually to a real human being. It's my theory. It's my pet theory.
We're all, you know, also all ostracized comic dorks from a very young age. It's not like we're getting elected to the prom court, so we have a lot of time to think about our own miserable lives and to write it down, you know? I think it's just a natural outlet, so.
One thing I'll just chime in as a librarian, I've always noticed that memoir and biographical comics, at least in the States, always have a higher cachet than any other kind of comic. They're considered more legitimate. And more literary, so I find that no one really minds saying that they read, you know, Persepolis, because that's okay to have read that.
Except in Chicago.
But then the stigma goes towards other comics, and so at least at the moment, that I don't know why that's culturally true, but that seems to be the deal, that they're considered okay for everybody to read. Anyway, did you have a question?
I did. Yeah. I know, Brandon, you said that you don't ever want to run out of stories while you're writing. I was wondering, and this is a question for everyone, if there's a certain cutoff point of where you just need to have that as part of your life and just go, go, go.
Well, Scholastic wants me to cut it off at 15 because they publish books for children. They're not interested in my college years. And right now, I'm actually not either. I'm really happy that I get to make books that connect with kids. So I'm just, right now, just like mining my childhood for everything it's worth. We'll see how long that lasts.
No, I only tell the real dirty stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about curatorship of personal stories, and I think that's really important in storytelling, in personal narratives, to curate what you want to include and what you don't. And like, personally, I don't tend to include things that that will either like get me in trouble with my family or like get me in trouble with the police. So. Tend to curate in that direction, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it depends on the story that you're telling. You're not going to throw everything into the pot and see what sticks if you're trying to tell a narrative, if you have a story in mind, like the way that we're talking about, you know, making a list or making a script. You know, there's things that you pick and things that you don't, and so I think that, you know, depending on what story direction you want to go in, then that's what makes it in, and the other stuff doesn't. So like, not everything is totally up for grabs, but, like, you know, the good stories are definitely up for grabs.
I have to end all memoir when I met my wife, because if I reveal any of her secrets, she will rip my balls off. Self-preservation, man.
Nice.
Does anyone else have questions?
Kind of a nuts and bolts question, like, especially if you're doing a lot of stuff online or just for yourself, but hopefully someone will pick it up. Do you have, like, page size or page count or any, like, editorial type thing in mind while you're making it? Or how does that kind of
page count
happen?
Well, you want it to be big enough that it's, you know, gonna, I mean, I don't think you want to have, like, a weird price point, like, you know, $12.95 or something like that. You make it small enough so it'll be a, you know, cheap comic, or big enough that it'll be a reasonable graphic novel. So, what, 200-300 pages, something like that?
Long enough to tell the story, yeah.
Right. You know, I'd be lying to you if I said I understood how the big book business is working right now at all. I don't know that anyone does, including the people who run the book business.
But what I found out is if you continue working as a storyteller, you get a feeling for how long a story will be.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, I know, okay, this is a 200-page story, or this is a 6-page story.
And you also learn how long it takes you to draw.
Yes.
I'm at the point now where I'm like, I don't want my books to come out every 5 years. So, right? Smiles took me 5 years from start to finish.
I my friend Dahmer took me 20.
Oh, man, you win. And that's it. And do you plan to release another memoir within the next 20 years?
I'm going to work on it. I'm hoping to cut it down to 10.
Have it each time.
Are you ever concerned that your rendering of events will become definitive? I mean, you've kind of touched on this already, like when you talk to your family or your friends. Are you ever concerned that you're kind of exerting power over that rendering of reality? Do you ever get pushback?
Well, that's a responsibility. I mean, you think of some of the other, he's concerned whether our rendering of events will become definitive. And what you're seeing is that a lot of graphic novels, for example, Alan Moore's From Hell, which is about Jack the Ripper, a lot of people think that's
history. Mm-hmm.
That's history. Answer, yeah. Or Brian Michael Bendis' Torso. I can tell you that both those are completely made up because there was never any resolution and no one knows huge chunks of the story. So yeah, that's a danger when you start to move into that kind of, you know, fictional nonfiction. I don't know what else you'd call it. Because truth now is so malleable that, you know, I think that you really have a duty to the truth. To get it as accurate. And I actually don't, I mean, those books are very well done, but I have a big problem with that kind of work.
They say the winners write the history books.
Right.
So I guess we're all the winners of our own stories. Unless we're the losers, I don't know.
Anybody else? I don't know if there's anyone in the back. Yeah?
One slightly technical question. Does do you guys find that there's a difference in your art style? Autobiographical, as opposed to if you do, or if it isn't autobiographical.
Art style, did you just say?
Yeah, you find that you do a lot of autographic stuff, change the way you draw.
I mean, hopefully the drawing gets better with each book.
Right. Progression.
But no, I don't constantly change. Well, maybe a little bit with My Friend Dahmer. I cut down on the sort of expressionistic flourishes a little, just because I felt that the story dictated it. But the style is still there.
I try to find the right expression for every story. I do a lot of different stuff, like common reports about shopping centers or about spaces, and then I did this punk story. And now I did a book which is located in the Third Reich in Berlin during the Nazi terror. And all these stories need a different aesthetic, so I try to change the language of the drawing as far as it is possible for me. As far as I can do it. But I always try to find the sound of the...
But you're not losing your stylist. I mean, your stuff all still looks like you did it. I mean, you know, you're not losing your stylistic... No, you're not. I mean, it still looks like your work.
Okay.
I can't know. It does.
Just as a matter of practicality, I started working on Smile at a smaller chin size than I was... working. I usually work 11 by 14, but I wanted to do, Smile was just like a side project, just like a thing I was doing for myself, and so I did it small, I did it 9 by 12 so it fit on my scanner. I tried to do it as quickly as possible, and it just kind of ended up working. So for this, the memoir I'm working on now, I've gone back to that small trim size, just, and something about it just feels more intimate to me than when I'm writing other types of stories, so that's really the only difference that I can tell you.
Go ahead.
Is it hard? Well, firstly, I just want to say that I really loved My Friend Dahmer. I've reread it all the time. And I think it's really graceful.
Thank you.
Is it hard drawing characters and trying, like, I know that sometimes, like, I'll be drawing a comic and then the character will completely change from
hand. Oh, over the course of the book? Yeah, that can be a problem. What I do is actually, and I've done this with my last two books, and it just drives me nuts, is you get to the end of the book and you notice that, and you got to go back and redraw some of the faces at the beginning of the book and sort of paste them into place. Yeah, it's really a pain in the ass. But yes, that's a fairly common problem, I think.
Nope, sorry. I see there's someone in the back, yes?
So storytelling in general is using narrative as a metaphor for experience. How do you think that usage functions differently between fiction and nonfiction, and why do you choose nonfiction? Why do you think that distinction exists?
Wow.
I wouldn't do fiction because if I would invent things, it wouldn't be that interesting. I think the reality is more interesting and more fantastic than everything I could invent here.
See, I really like doing fiction. The book between my two memoirs is fiction, and I had a blast doing it, and I would like to do more. So, I don't know how to answer that question because I'm not entirely sure what you said. But I enjoy both. It's a different process, but I like doing both.
Yeah, I think. Sometimes it depends on what comes naturally to you as a storyteller. And I'm really drawn to the sort of honesty and the connection of writing about true events. So.
I think we have time for like one more question. Is there anybody?
One more.
No, please. Or we can end early.
Oh, there goes a hand.
Way in the back.
Hey,
in the back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you saying we do have cliches in our memoir? It's a loaded question. How do you steer clear?
Maybe sometimes if a cliche pumps up and you realize, if you're lucky to realize that it's a cliche, then it's a lot of fun to turn it around and to surprise the reader with showing, hey, it wasn't like that.
Right.
You know?
Or just even if it's a cliche event, to tell it in a new light. Because if it's cliched, that means that, you know, many other people have experienced something similar. So that's something that we all can connect with. And to talk about that in a new way is a good way to storytell, definitely.
You just have to be careful.
Yeah,
right?
You just have to be careful.
There's some of those things, you know, they're so almost rote. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Jaime Hernandez was talking... Once I was listening to him talk, and he's talking about the fluttering leaf syndrome, which is real big in indie comics, where you'd have like a leaf floating through panels over like two pages. And I was like, oh crap, I've got a scene like that in the book. So I went home and ripped it up. But I'm really glad he did, and I haven't drawn a leaf since.
I'm happy that you say that, because I always admire people which can do this atmospheric range. And I can't, I always have to cut it so short.
No, you're lucky.
But I always think, the French artists, they all can do this atmospheric stuff.
I think we're pretty much at the end for this. But thank you, everybody. Thank you, all the panelists.